Deuteronomy chapter 5. That's where we will begin. Last week, if you were here, we talked a bit about how one way to look at this book is to look at this as the last chance a parent has to try to pass on guidance and words of wisdom to a child as the child is about to go off on his or her own. There's a different way to look at this. And I'm probably going to reveal what the turnover is in our church when I ask this. How many of you remember Jim Pardo? Larger number than I'd hoped for. Jim Pardo was the pastor of our church before Travis Collins. He's been gone about 12 years now. And what I'm asking is, do you remember the last month that he was in the pulpit? Do you remember that? He stood up in the pulpit and he said, I have 4 more weeks to be your preacher. And then it ends. And I have spent a lot of time thinking, what's the last thing I need to say? And he preached a 4 sermon series that was powerful. If you don't know what he said, check with me. I've got notes and I can share those with you. But this is a second way to look at the book of Deuteronomy. Moses is not permitted to go into the promised land with the people. So this is his last chance as the spiritual leader to say something to the people that they need to remember. The result of this is, and once you realize this, it's not surprising, the book has a sense of repetition to it. He will say something, and he will say similar things, but from a slightly different standpoint or a slightly different wording, but he continues to hit the same ideas. And today we're taking up what is in essence the second of his, if you want to call them, a series of sermons that he's giving. This is the second of his sermons, starts around the beginning of chapter 5, maybe just a little bit before chapter 5 begins. And there's a couple more still to come. I want you to look at chapter 5, verse 1. Moses called all Israel together and said to them, Listen, Israel, to the laws and customs that I proclaim to you today. Learn them and take care to observe them. Verse 2, The Lord our God made a covenant with us at Horeb, Sinai, called in other places. The Lord made this covenant not with our ancestors, but with us, with all of us alive here today. On the mountain from the heart of the fire, the Lord spoke to you face to face while I stood between you and the Lord to let you know what the Lord was saying, since you were afraid of the fire and had not gone up the mountain. He said, and then verse 6 starts. Take a quick look at verse 6, verse 7, verse 8. What's this? What is this section? This is the Ten Commandments. It isn't perfectly, but it's almost word for word, a quotation from Exodus 20. And if you look at this, verse 22, I'm hoping it's verse 22 is when this is over. I've got some slightly different numbers in my system, in my translation. I've tried to reconcile this with yours. These were the words the Lord spoke to you when you were all assembled on the mountain. Is that your verse 22? Is that right? Thunderously he spoke to you from the heart of the fire in cloud and thick darkness. He added nothing but wrote them on 2 tablets of stone which he gave to me. So what he has done is he has repeated the Ten Commandments. Now, if you notice, it started out, chapter 5, verse 1, Listen, O Israel, to the laws and customs that I proclaim to you today. It's going to take him a while to do all that. We've got much of the rest of the book of Deuteronomy still coming. The laws and customs include way more than the Ten Commandments. What was special about the Ten Commandments? And as is often the case, the answer may not be what you first think it might be, but please tell me what you first think. What's special about the Ten Commandments? Go back to chapter 5, verse 4. On this mountain, from the heart of the fire, the Lord spoke to you face to face. But look at verse... That's the end of verse 4, I think. Look at verse 5. While I stood between you and the Lord to let you know what the Lord was saying, since you were afraid of the fire and had not gone up the mountain. Moses is talking about two very different things here. The Lord spoke from the heart of the fire, and what did the people say? Uh-oh, you don't remember? We don't ever want to hear that again. We're not sure why we're still alive now. If we hear that voice a second time, we know we're not going to be alive. How can anyone hear the voice of God and still be alive? So you go up on the mountain. You listen to what God says. And you come back down and tell us. And so Moses is putting these two together. God spoke briefly to give you the essence of what was coming, the heart of the law, the summary of the law, however you call that. And then Moses went up to be the one standing in between God and the people to come back down and tell them what God said. If you get that picture, then what you realize is the context in which Moses is speaking is to say, God's voice set it all off. That scared you to death. You then asked me to be the intermediary. And now I've done that. And I'm now reminding you of those of that day and of the days that followed. I'm reminding you of what God said when he said it himself, and then of what he said through me. And I'm reminding you of the context of that. That's what you're hearing in here. Everybody okay? Questions so far? Good. Well, there's going to be a lot about God's voice. Yeah, there's going to be a lot about that. Okay? Now, I want us to go back for just a moment to... I'm still in chapter 5. But I want you to take a look at verse 32. From verse 23 to verse 31, he's saying the things I just very quickly summarized. Verse 32, Moses says, keep these laws, mine says keep them, but he's talking about the laws and customs and instructions that they've gotten. Keep them and put them into practice. And it sounds like it's saying, as a continuation of that thought, such is the Lord's command to you. But my translation has an interesting little punctuation there. It has a colon. Keep those instructions, keep those laws, put them into practice, colon. Such is God's command with you. Such is God's command to you. And you sort of get a sense that he's now going to tell you what God's specific command is in respect to all the laws and customs. So now keep following with me. I'm still in verse 32. Stray neither to the left nor the right. Follow the whole way the Lord has marked out for you, and you will survive to prosper and live long in the country which you're going to possess. So let's look at this for a moment. Here's God's instructions to you. Keep those laws and instructions. Put them into practice. Don't stray to the, mine has right first, don't stray to the right or the left. Follow the whole way. I think yours probably says follow all the way. Is that right? What does your translation say? Mine says follow the whole way. I think yours says follow all the way.
In all the way,
yours says. Okay. I like follow the whole way, and I'm going to try to expand that just a little bit right now. Let's start with the stray neither to the right nor the left. Virginia is a battleground state. My television is about to melt from the vitriol that pours out of it. The one side says you can't possibly vote for this guy. The country is going to implode and collapse if you do. And the other side says, but you can't vote for that one either because all these awful things are going to happen. Where's the middle ground gone? They call it the right and left here, and that's one way to pitch it. Because that's sort of the context in which we hear this. And what I want to do is I want to say, now, you guys are off the hook because you haven't been here for a while. You guys are pretty new, so you're off the hook. Some of the rest of you, you come from time to time. Some of the rest of you have been here for a little while. I went 8 weeks about 2 years ago, and I took you through this idea of the right and the left. I came into it with what I consider to be the most important principle anyone can ever learn if they're about to learn science. You may not know this. I teach chemistry at the University of Richmond. Okay, and I think the most important principle anyone can know is the story of Goldilocks. It explains so many things. And I'm not kidding. I'm not kidding. It explains so many things. Just to make sure that we understand this, do we all remember the story of Goldilocks? Where was Goldilocks? Out in the woods, right? Lost, hungry, right? What did she see? The bear's house. How many bears were inside the house? None.
That was tricky.
None. Where were the Bears? They were out taking a walk. Why were they out taking a walk? Because the porridge was too hot. She comes walking in the door. What does she see? She sees a table set. She sees three bowls. She's hungry. She's tired. She sees chairs. She sees beds. Ooh, this is great. She takes a taste of porridge. What does she taste? It's too hot. She moves to the next bowl. She takes a taste. What does she taste? It's too cold. She tastes the third one, and it's... That's the story of Goldilocks. Straight, neither to the right nor the left. That sounds like Goldilocks. That sounds a lot like Goldilocks. You look at the periodic chart. Two different ways to make it look like Goldilocks. You look at the way atoms are constructed. Goldilocks, Goldilocks everywhere. You read the reports on economics. There was a big report on economics out of Sweden, and they talked about the sweet spot. They called it the Goldilocks spot for an economy. Neither too much inflation, not too much deflation, not too much depression. They talk about the Goldilocks place for planets around suns. Not too hot, not too cold, just right. Mars is too cold. Venus is too hot. Earth is? See? If you understand Goldilocks, lots of things start to make sense. Now, 6 or 8 weeks, we talked about this, and every week I said the same thing. I taught the same lesson for 8 weeks, and none of you noticed. Because we kept coming in from other directions. But let me summarize what I hope you heard, and what maybe two of you, when we get finished, will actually remember. Jesus said, there is a wide and broad way that leads to destruction, and many there are who find it. There is a narrow way which leads to life, and few find that. And our picture of that narrow way is a walkway with a stone wall on one side and a big drop-off on the other side. No, no, no. It's a tightrope. You can fall off on either side. And Satan is trying to make you get off that narrow way. He's trying to push you off. And if he can't push you off to one side, what does he do? He pulls you off to the other side. What does that look like? God says, this is the way I want you to live. Satan tries to push you to live in some other way. And if he succeeds, he's won a victory in your life. One from which you will struggle to recover. Your influence will be shot. Your life will be in trouble. And it's awful what happens if Satan is successful at pushing you off. Getting back is tough. People do it, and God is to be praised that there are people who help. But that's a tough process. But if he can't push you off to misbehaving, to doing things that he says is wrong, where does he try to pull you? He tries to pull you to arrogance and pride. Look how good I am. And you look down your noses at the people who are falling off. And Satan has won just as big a victory. God says there's things he hates because he just cannot work with people who live there. And high in that list is pride. So if he can't push you off to doing the kinds of things that ruin your life, he then tries to pull you into attitudes that take you to a different place that isn't on that straight and narrow, as some of us have learned to call it. Okay? So when he says, stray neither to the right or left, this is one of the huge, huge pieces in the Bible. And it links and connects to lots of things that go across the whole of the Bible, well into the New Testament. But he also says, follow the whole way. Follow the whole way. I'm trying still to think of a good analogy to make that one work. I tried one this morning. It came from the football game that you attended. Okay? There was one time where this guy caught a pass and he was so wide open. And he just took off. And the weight of the end zone was clear. Nobody was going to catch it. What if he had just stopped halfway there? What if he had just stopped halfway there? You haven't finished the job if you stop halfway. That's why we talk about half measures in a somewhat critical tone. Follow the whole way. Following all the way through. You played golf. You played golf recently and you were out of shape, so it kind of hurt you. I played tennis when I was in high school. Did you read the article about the lineman from William & Mary who played tennis when he was in high school? 6'4", I think it was, 285. And the comment was, what did your opponents feel like when they saw you on the other side of the net? Okay. I played tennis when I was in high school. It was fun. You get a net smash of the proper kind, there is no returning the ball. It's going over the back fence. That's good. Okay. This picture that you have, they taught me when I was playing tennis that it didn't matter how the ball hit the net or the netting in the racket as much as it did the way that my hand continued that follow through had all kinds of things to do it. Now, one of the things that happened, this is a true story, and I didn't realize this morning I was going to tell you this. The college that I attended was brand new the day I set foot on campus. I was in the first 180 students to attend this college, and we were all freshmen. Barbara came in as a sophomore. There were no seniors. There were no juniors. There were no sophomores. Nothing but freshmen. Every building was new. Every classroom, it was the first time that classroom had been used. Very unusual way to go to college. They hired a contractor to build this thing, to build the few buildings that were there. And one of the things they said, we want to put in some tennis courts. The contractor had never played tennis. He had no one who played tennis. All he knew was to lay concrete for parking lots. How hard could it be, he said. I just lay out some concrete, and I draw some lines. And then I put some poles in the ground and let them hang in that. His picture was, this was Houston. I went to school in Houston. It rains cats and dogs at 4 o'clock every afternoon. About an hour, half an hour later, it's quit. But if you're not careful, the water puddles and pools for a while before it drains away. And he said, you know, living in Houston, I got to make sure the water drains off of that properly. True story. They had a 4-inch drop from the net to the baseline. A 4-inch drop on both sides. The sucker was like a tent. It would rain, it would dry, just like that. It was dry. But this follow-through that I'm talking about, what I learned was overspin. Do you guys know what overspin is? You hit the ball, and as you hit it, you take your racket like that, right? And what you did was the ball would go up like this, and boom, have a breakdown like that, right? That follow-through makes all the thing. In golf, I've played golf twice in my life. I'm one of the few people in the world who can say this. In the two rounds of golf that I played, I got a Mack truck in one. I was running alongside of a major U.S. highway in Arkansas. I hit the ball, and it went like that and caught the windshield of a Mack truck coming the other direction. There was a 10-foot chain-link fence, thank goodness for that, because the trucker couldn't get through to do something. And I'm standing there. Right? It went like that. And they told me you got the wrong follow-through. I'm making light of it, but am I making my point? Neither to the right nor the left. Follow the whole way through what God has called you to do. That's the discipling God is calling everyone to do. And it's here. And what's the result? I'm still looking at verse 33. What's the consequence of doing this? Follow the whole way the Lord has marked out for you, and you will live. Mine says survive. And I like that translation because it stands in stark contrast to the word prosper. Survive and prosper aren't the same word. And I like that juxtaposition. Why? Because I think Travis Collins gave me the best picture this morning that I have ever heard anybody give on how to think about God's provision.
It sustains you.
Were you there at the end of the sermon today?
I am. I volunteered.
Did you guys get there? So you didn't. I'm going to have to tell you about this. Okay. Anybody else need to know about this? If so, I'm talking to you. He talked about the soldiers on D-Day. Mm-hmm. Mentioned the Bedford boys. Mm-hmm. And the guy sitting next to me in the choir leans over and says, one of those was my uncle.
Exactly.
Except he wasn't one of the 19 who died. He was one of the Bedford boys who didn't die. And he came back a broken man the rest of his life. They trusted their commander, Eisenhower. Did you hear the way Travis laid that out? Did you have thoughts come into your head that widened what he said? What did they trust about Eisenhower? Did they trust that everything was going to be easy? Did they trust that everything was going to be comfortable, they were going to be well-fed, sheltered, safe, and never harmed, and never in risk of harm? Absolutely not. What did they trust?
That it was the right thing.
They trust that the mission was right, that it had consequences that would be lasting good. There's a a national public radio program that comes on. And the sponsor, you know, they don't have commercials. They just tell you who the sponsors are. Comes out like a commercial. They said, this is sponsored by a foundation whose purpose is to do lasting good. Not just do good, but to do lasting good. I like that phrase. What else did they trust? They trusted that the commander cared about them. They trusted that they were going to have as much protection as he could provide, as much of a chance of success as he could give them. Did they trust that they would not be harmed? How could they? Trust is different. And when the word prosper comes, what does it mean? It means the undertaking that God puts you to will have the outcome God calls on it to have when you work with God in the process. It isn't that you will be rich. It isn't that you will be poor. Okay, Bob.
We have the same trust in Eisenhower and Korea in the same way. We had five enemy armies lined up at the Yellow River, and we trusted Eisenhower.
Eisenhower was president, or was about to be, yeah.
He came over there and straightened it out.
You're going to have to give me just a second, because I've got to find it. Somebody showed it to me this morning, and I forgot to go find it. I'm not finding it. It's supposed to be in Proverbs. Yes, it is. Proverbs 30. Proverbs 30, verse 7 and 8. Has what a person in the first hour called the middle class prayer. I've never seen this before. But it fits with what we're trying to talk about this morning. Proverbs 30, starting at verse 7 and going down through verse 9. Two things I beg of you, do not begrudge me them before I die. Keep falsehoods and lies far from me. Give me neither poverty nor riches. Grant me only my share of food. For fear that, surrounded by plenty, I should fall away and say, God, who's that? Or else in destitution take to stealing and thereby profane the name of my God. What does prosper mean? Well, you'll see, because Moses is going to tell you. All right. We doing okay so far?
Hey, Bill.
Yes?
I just have a funny story that's rumbling around my head. You were talking about the golf analogies. This was a million years ago. I was like 17 years old, and I was playing the Women's City Golf Tournament, and had only played it maybe one or the year before. And so I was in the qualifying round, so I just hear my dad's telling me the instructions, hang in there, just hang in there. Was playing pretty good. Got on par five, got on the green, and like three putted. I mean, did something ridiculous. So I tanked my score. So I walked up to it and smacked the ball off the green. Put out. I'm still in this qualifying round. He's on the side, kind of looking at me like, yeah, that's pretty stupid. And so I'm now back in the fairway because I smacked it off the green in my anger. And I have to finish the hole. You see, looking at me going, you have to finish the hole. Snap. You know, so I turned a 7 into about a 12. Then now I had to come back on the green. The girls were just, these women were standing on the side, kind of going, this is why 17-year-olds don't win this tournament, you know. And so I finished the hole, I take my 12, now I'm even more frustrated, mortified, and my dad just kept saying, you have to finish. I mean, I wanted to quit, I wanted to walk, this is probably on like hole number 11. I mean, I have now like, feeling like I've tanked my score. Anyway, I finished the round, and I remember thinking, boy, I'll never make that mistake again. But I went on to win the Women's City from that point. And my dad was just like, because he kept saying, you have to finish. He's like, I'm not going to quit. And I read that thinking, either right or left, just finish. And the lesson my dad kept telling me was, you just have to finish what you start. You cannot. And if you finish what you start, whether you win or lose, you will learn and gain so much from just finishing what you start. And
can I tag on that? One of the hardest things ever is to see somebody doing something that you know you've done before, and they're falling into a pit like they've never seen. and you feel like, just get them out. And that's hard. And somebody in this room today is dealing with that with somebody very close to them, and I know about that. I'm not supposed to. I want to stick with this just a second, because we skipped over from verse 23 to 31, right? I summarize this very quickly. Verse 23, 24, 25, 26, this is where the people hear the voice and the elders and all go to Moses and say, we don't ever want to hear that again. You go up on the mountain and find out. Verse 27, you go near yourself and listen to everything the Lord our God may say, and then you come back and tell us everything the Lord has God has told you. We will listen and put it into practice. Do you see that? You should underline that if you have a pen that doesn't bleed through. Verse 28, Moses comments on this. The Lord heard what you said to me, and he said to me, I have heard what these people are saying. Everything they said is well said. Verse 29, if only their hearts were always so. Set on fearing me and on keeping my commandments. For if they were, they and their children might prosper forever. Moses knows what's going to happen. That's why Moses spends part of his time talking about when you fall off the track, from there, find your way back. We talked about this last time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
2 Timothy 3:16 talks about that, and the message really says it good. Every part of Scripture is God-breathed, useful in one way or another, showing us the truth, exposing our rebellion, correcting our mistakes, training us to live God's way. He shows us the path, how we got off the path, how to get back on the path, and how to stay on the path.
That's good. Chapter 6. We've still got a little bit more time. I promised Russell that if we started early, I'd quit early. I'm going to try my best to keep that promise. But let's see. First, chapter 6. Verse 1. Such then are the commandments, laws, and customs which the Lord your God has instructed me to teach you, for you to observe in the country which you are on your way to possess. And he talks about if throughout your lives you fear the Lord your God and keep all his laws and commandments which I'm laying down for you today, you will live long. You and your child and your grandchild. He switches to singular at that point. Listen then, Israel, keep and observe what will make you prosperous and numerous, as the Lord, the God of your ancestors, has promised you in giving you a country filled, flowing with milk and honey. The next two verses... passionately Jewish people believe are perhaps the most important verses in the whole of the Old Testament. It's called the Shema. And I'm told Orthodox Jews will quote this text regularly in their remembrance and in their prayers. In the King James Version, it starts, Hear, O Israel. In my translation, it starts, Listen, Israel. The Lord our God is the one and only Lord. You must love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. He then goes on, Let the words I enjoin on you today stay in your heart. Tell them to your children. Keep on telling them when you're sitting at home, when you're out and about, when you're lying down, when you're standing up. Fasten them on your hand as a sign, on your forehead as a headband. Write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. Barbara and I have had one opportunity to stand by the Wailing Wall in Israel, and we saw Orthodox Jews with a little box bound on a leather strap here and another one bound on their arm, fulfilling this particular verse. If you've seen I think they're called mezuzahs that are nailed next to the door of the home of practicing Jews. This external reminders are vital and helpful, but don't miss where this thing started. Don't miss where this thing started. Verse 6. Let the words I enjoin on you today stay where? In your heart. Then the external reminders will take you back to what's in your heart. But it all begins and ends. Love the Lord your God with all your heart.
your soul, all your strength. Jesus quoted those words in the second, in the New Testament. He added a word. What did he add?
Mind.
Travis has reminded you of this one. What does this stand for? What does this represent? I know. I heard it just this morning. The emotional aspects of your life. Once you get that one, the rest are somewhat easy. This one? Spiritual aspects of your life.
Physical.
Did Travis show you guys in the 8 o'clock service of the heart? Did he tell you about the Hebrew?
He told us. He didn't show us.
He showed us a picture.
We don't have a big screen TV.
He showed us a picture, and there are two things. He said that the hook is God's authority as our shepherd, and then the other was the inner floor plan of the tent of meeting.
Which
was God's guidance on the of our
authority. Authority with the
authority of him.
The last one.
Shepherd's hook. But didn't Travis also say when he was talking about the heart that in Jewish tradition it was considered that your thoughts were there too?
The word heart would capture both of these. By the time Jesus came, he gave you two words where one had sufficed before, and I think you can see a shift of language over about 1,500 years that we now sort of have two different words. The Greeks, I think, are in part responsible for that, sort of a separation out of those. And I think Jesus recognized, if I'm going to be understood, I'll do it this way. It's in Aramaic, so it's not a quotation in Hebrew, probably. We have these aspects to our life, and what they're calling is, let our relationship with God be part of that fiber of our being. Now, I want to let you see one more thing. Come down to verse 10. What's your first word? Yours says when in most translations, then in one or two. I want it to be when for the moment. Is that okay? When the Lord has brought you into the country which he swore to your ancestors, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, that he would give you. Jump down to verse 12. What does it say? When that day comes. Right now, they haven't entered the promised land. That's still coming. When they do, what does he say? Be careful. Take care, I think one translation says. What? Watch yourself, yours says. Watch yourself for what? Lest you forget. Be careful you do not forget the Lord who has brought you out of Egypt, out of the place of slave labor. The Lord your God is the one you must fear. Him alone you must serve. His is the name by which you should swear. That thought is echoed about three or four times in other places in Scripture, including, I think, one in the New Testament. We won't follow that rabbit right now. Let's take one more step. Take a look in verse 20. Take a look in verse 20. In times to come, when your child, mine has that singular, yours may say son, mine says child. I think that's a better quote, better translation. In times to come, when your child asks you, now I want you to look really, really careful at the question the child is asking. Look carefully at that question, because there's a very interesting construction with pronouns. What is the meaning of these instructions, laws, and customs which the Lord, our God, is laying down for
you?
Doesn't say us. Does it? Most translations don't. Most translations say you. What's the child saying? What's all this stuff you keep talking about that's incumbent upon you? The implication is, it's not incumbent on me yet. How does that process of faith moving from one generation to another, how's that going to happen? And part of it is answering questions that say, you know, I'm not sure I see the point of all this, in a way that helps bring that child into the experience that you've had. And look at the answer. You are to tell your child, once we, all of us were there. Those of us who weren't yet born were there in the bodies of our ancestors. Once we were slaves in Egypt to Pharaoh,
And the Lord brought us out of Egypt by his mighty hand. Before our eyes, the Lord worked great and terrible signs against Egypt. He brought us out of there to lead us into the country. Do you notice how he's just hammering? You should have used us, because there was an experience there that forged the people that we are and made us who we are today. Verse 25. Verse 24, and the Lord has therefore commanded us to observe all these laws and to fear the Lord our God, so as to be, what?
Prosper.
Happy forever, mine says. And
kept alive.
Kept alive. Mine says survive. To be happy forever, yours may say prosperous there. And to survive, to be kept alive, as we do to this day. For us, right living will mean this: to keep and observe all these commandments in obedience to the Lord our God as he has commanded us. Chapter 7 is a problem. Because when you get into chapter 7, you start to hear the language that sure sounds like genocide. The Lord your God, chapter 7, verse 1, when the Lord your God has brought you into the country which you're going to make your own, many nations will fall before you. He names seven of them. The Lord is going to put them at your mercy. You will conquer them. You must put them under the curse, of destruction. You must make no treaty with them or show them any pity. You must not intermarry. You must not give a daughter of yours to a son of theirs, or a daughter of theirs take for a son of yours. For your son would be seduced from following me into serving other gods. The wrath of the Lord would blaze out against you, and he would instantly destroy you. Instead, treat them like this: tear down their altars, smash their standing stones, cut down their sacred poles, burn their idols. For you are a people consecrated to the Lord your God. Of all the peoples on earth, you have been chosen by the Lord your God to be his own people. Why genocide? Why this necessity? I've heard three arguments for this. Let me give you them. Number one, to finally create on earth one place where goodness can grow. To finally form a place. There were places everywhere where evil was growing. To finally one place where it was gone. If you notice carefully, when he finally gets around to talking about what you tear down and destroy in verse 5, it's not the people, right? What is it? Their religious symbols, their religious idols. He says a little bit later to wipe out a record of their kings. Don't remember their leaders. Don't remember their religious rituals. Get all those things to where they're out of sight, to give a place for goodness to grow, this one commentator says. Another one takes the analogy to cancer that I've talked with you about. When you have cancer and a surgeon invades your body to try to get it, you do not want the surgeon to say, "I got most of it." What do you want the surgeon to say? "I got it all." It's sort of the other side of that analogy. And the third one is, we don't know, because we don't understand God very much. And I think we can understand him some. So I'm leaning toward the first two. Genocide is still something I think is horrible and wrong. And it sounds like that's what they're saying. And to that degree, it's a struggle to go. But all that Travis said this morning sort of comes in at that point. When you don't understand, trust his heart. Let's stay on this for just a moment. Chapter 7, verse 7. Why did God pick this people? He set his heart on you and chose you, not because you were the most numerous of all people, for indeed you were the smallest of all, but rather, what? He loved you and he meant to keep the oath which he swore to your ancestors. Now, I'm going to skip some things I did in the first hour at this point to be true to my promise to Russell. But I do want to give you a word spelled with English letters. It's a Hebrew word spelled with English letters. It is Hesed. It is arguably the most powerful word in the Old Testament for who God is, parallel to agape in the Greek in the New Testament. The word is not translated love. It's translated as faithful love. Listen again. Why did God choose you? Because you just read it. He loved you, and he was intent on keeping the oath that he swore to you.
our God is faithful to follow through on what he says. And the basis of what he says is his love for us. The word hesed captures faithful love. And if you read through a good part of what I'm skipping over, you will see this. Chapter 8. You must keep and put into practice all the commandments which I enjoin on you today so that you may survive. There's that word again. If yours translated, keep you alive or something like that, that's probably what it'll say again. So that you may survive and increase in numbers and enter the country which the Lord promised on oath to your ancestors and make it your own. Verse 2. Remember the long road by which the Lord God has led you for 40 years in the desert. Why did he do that? I'm continuing to read in that verse. He had purposes. What was his first purpose? To humble you. Second, to test you. Third, to know your inmost heart, whether you would keep his commandments or not. He humbled you. He made you feel hunger. He fed you with manna, which neither you nor your ancestors has ever known. Why? To make you understand that human beings live, survive, are kept alive, not by bread alone, but what? By the every word that comes out of the mouth of the Lord. One of the most important verses in the whole of the Old Testament is just a chapter away from the Shema. Man will not live by bread alone, but by every word that comes out of the mouth of the Lord. The clothes on your back did not wear out. Your feet never swelled all those 40 years. Learn from this that the Lord your God was training you as a man trains his child, and therefore keep the commandments of the Lord your God and so follow his ways and fear him. Verse 11, how does yours start? Beware. Mine says be careful. This is always the other half. All the way through Deuteronomy, he says, here are the good things that will come if you're obedient, and here's the problems that are going to come if you forget. Be careful not to forget the Lord your God. Verse 12, when you have eaten all you want, when you've built fine houses to live in, when you've seen your flocks and herds increase, your silver and gold abound, and all your possessions grow great, do not become proud of heart. Do not then forget the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt. Verse 17, beware of thinking to yourself, my own strength and the might of my own hand have given me the power to act like this. Remember, it is the Lord your God. He is the one who gave you the strength to act effectively like this, thus keeping then as today the covenant which he swore to your ancestors. Be sure if you forget the Lord your God, if you follow other gods, if you serve them and bow down to them, I testify to you today, you will perish. Yeah.
The next chapter, first chapter 20, that could be the answer as to why everything's destroyed too.
Yeah. You'll see in that section back in chapter 7, he says, there is a destruction coming for those people who stand in your way. If you begin to act like them, that same destruction will be yours. Mm-hmm. One of the most powerful places is down in verse 25 and 26 of chapter 7. You must burn the statues of their gods. But you must not covet the gold or silver that covers those statues. If you take it, you will be caught in a snare. It is detestable to the Lord your God, and you must not bring any detestable thing into your house, or you, like it, will come under the curse of destruction. Now, there's a break point here, and we're going to start at chapter 9 next time. If you haven't read through this, read again. Read a little bit coming into it, and then read from chapter 9 up a few chapters, and you'll be ready for next week. What did we learn today? In Moses' last words to his people, what does he keep saying? There are blessings beyond measure that come from following God's laws. There are problems beyond measure that comes from forgetting them and ignoring them. God is a God of love, a God of faithful love. And he is guiding you because he loves you and cares for you. It is a foolish person who ignores that and follows their own way. Let's have a word of prayer as we go. Our Father, we thank you for the time you've given us, and we thank you for this time we've had today. I pray that you would help these words come alive in each of our hearts and help us as we ponder what you say to be able to begin to say, I once was blind, but now I see. So that's what we pray, that you would open our eyes, open our ears, so that we can hear and see all that you're saying to us and all that you're showing us in what is true about the world we live in. All this we pray in your Son's name. Amen.